To help discover the truth behind the Da Vinci Code, American author Amy Wellborn researched Dan Brown's claims. Her book, Decoding Mary Magdalene, Truth, Legend, and Lies, is an effort to bring out the facts behind the fiction of the Da Vinci Code. Was Mary Magdalene really nothing more than a repentant prostitute? And did she bear Jesus' children? Wellborn spoke to Charles Collins about the figure of this second Mary in the Gospels and how popular devotion to her has changed over the centuries.
When you consider what we know about other figures in the Gospel, we know about as much about Mary Magdalene as we do about most of them, maybe even more. You consider, what do we know about Peter, for sure? What do we know about any of the other apostles, for sure? And, you know, what we know about Mary Magdalene is sort of on par with them. And, her story has been embellished and conflated and confused with other figures. But, you know, you're right in that Mary Magdalene was, a very, very popular saint through Christian history and, really merits, I think, rediscovery today. The reason that we're sort of, Catholics are sort of really don't know much about Mary Magdalene today is because of some of the changes regarding the devotion of Mary Magdalene that happened after the Second Vatican Council. And what those changes did was to sort of take the ground out from under traditional devotion to Mary Magdalene as it had evolved over the past 1,000 or even 1,500 years, and sort of left Catholic, mainstream Orthodox devotion to Mary Magdalene sort of without a place to go. And, it's a kind of a frustrating, kind of a sad story because she was so popular.
You say it took something away. What exactly does that mean?
Well, what happened is that, when you read about Mary Magdalene in the Gospels, you see a woman who is identified primarily as the woman who, from whom Jesus drove seven demons, and then she was faithful to Jesus being at the cross and at the empty tomb. But there was always this sort of confusion about Mary Magdalene, even in the early Christian writing about her, and she is mentioned by many church fathers. And the reason for the confusion is that there are other women named Mary in the Gospels, and then there are other women who are unnamed who have stories similar to Mary's, who seem to, who are identified as sinners and so on. And so there was always this questioning in people's minds, well, could they be the same person? And in 591, what happened was that Pope Gregory I gave a homily in which he explicitly related Mary Magdalene, as she is specifically mentioned in the Gospels, Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus, and then the woman in Luke chapter 7, who is mentioned directly before Mary Magdalene is first mentioned by name. And in this story in Luke chapter 7, a nameless woman who is just identified as a sinner comes to Jesus in a Pharisee's house and repents and, washes and dries his feet with her hair. And so Gregory the Great sort of said this was all Mary Magdalene. And from that point on, because in this era, the homilies of popes were, dispersed throughout Western Christianity and were used as models by other preachers. And this story and this conflation, as we call it, got inexorable. And so this is who Mary Magdalene became in devotion. What happened after the Second Vatican Council, when the calendar of saints was reformed, was that, the Western Church sort of went back to the scriptural roots. After that point, the gospel for July 22nd, the Feast of St. Mary Magdalene, had been that Luke chapter 7 story. And so it was changed. It was changed to, I think, the John, risen Christ appearance to Jesus, to Mary Magdalene. And so the prayers and so on for the liturgy were straightened up to make only references to Mary Magdalene as they occurred in the Gospels, which is fine. But the fact is that as devotion to Mary Magdalene had exploded through the Middle Ages, the core of the devotion had been people's sense that she was a repentant sinner. This is the way she was from about, the early Middle Ages. She was portrayed in art, was as a repentant sinner, often sometimes and dual paintings with her on one side and Peter on the other. And so that was the root of her appeal. And so once, you know, sort of the official story that came down was, oh, no, you know, they're not the same person. You know, the devotion to Mary Magdalene sort of didn't have anywhere to go. But the thing to me that we have to remember is this is sort of where the Eastern Church has been all along. The Eastern Church never conflated these figures. They're all treated differently and separately on the liturgical calendar in the Eastern churches and Orthodoxy and even in Eastern Rite churches. And so, you know, this, they've sort of held fast to, you know, really, you know, they have their own legendary material. That's for sure. They have a whole set of, you know, legends about Mary Magdalene that are quite different from what evolved in Western Christianity. But, you know, to me, you know, if we want to retrieve devotion to Mary Magdalene, you know, looking to the East actually might be a place to start.
Now, this gives us a picture of the traditional devotion to Mary Magdalene, but that's not the picture of Mary Magdalene that we see now in the Da Vinci Code, for example, and in other books and works that have come out in recent decades. Where did this new picture of Mary Magdalene come from?
Well, the major thing that many contemporary commenters and devotees of Mary Magdalene, both within and without traditional Christianity, are saying is that she was the leader of a thoroughly alternative strain of Christianity. In fact, some scholars even refer to this explicitly as Magdalene Christianity, is that she sort of picked up the egalitarian thread that was present in the ministry and teaching of Jesus and was the head of a community and of a Christian-identified community that was, you know, radically egalitarian and so on. The most recent sort of major book on Mary Magdalene by a guy named Bruce Chilton, who is an Episcopal priest and who has before written books on Jesus and Paul, that came out last fall from Doubleday, incidentally, which also published the Da Vinci Code, you know, makes a big deal about reading the Gospels and sort of inferring that Mary from that was indeed the leader of this sort of alternative kind of Christianity, and she was revered among early Christians for her power to exorcise demons and for her anointing, and also that Jesus had taught her, you know, this sort of technique of visioning, which is the root of her experience of the risen Jesus, you know, after Jesus' death, that what that was the fruit of the sort of mystical stuff that Jesus had taught her. And so, it, you know, it's sort of all over the place, but it what it does is that it tries to erect a fantasy life for Mary in which she is an alternative to Peter and all that he represents.
And what's the basis of these theories?
Well, the basis of it is, I think, fundamentally people's readings of Gnostic writings, as, you know, and read through a prism of ideology.
What exactly do you mean by Gnostic writings?
Gnosticism, of course, was a heresy that was very dominant and very pervasive in, say, about the 2nd through the 5th century in the ancient Near East. It was not just Christian. There were Gnostic Jews. There were Gnostic everything. And Gnosticism was a dualistic heresy that very briefly suggested that there were two levels to reality, that the material world was evil and created by an evil God, and the spiritual world was good, and our, you know, sort of our task as human beings was to free the spiritual from the material. And so there are writings that reflect a Gnostic reading of Christianity that were produced very late, you know, from, say, the very late 2nd century through the 5th century. And these say the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Mary, Epistis Sophia, which is another Gnostic writing, and the Gospel of Thomas. Those are the four main sources that mention a Mary, and mention her as being a special recipient of the teaching of Jesus, as especially chosen by Jesus, and even in some of these writings as the object of jealousy by the apostles led by Peter, the male apostles. Now, you know, these don't reflect first century events, and there aren't any scholars who believe that they do. What they do is they reflect, you know, they're a metaphorical way for Gnostic Christianity to sort of reflect and come out with its own message. But those writings, you know, a lot of them were, quote, rediscovered in the late 19th century and much commented on then. And then beginning in the 1960s, they became a real object of scholarly and popular interest. And people reading them and reading them, you know, to me, ironically, we've been told for a long time, you know, in the modern age, to look at the canonical Gospels very skeptically, that they can't possibly tell us anything about what really happened in the first century. But somehow these Gnostic writings, which date from centuries later, are to be considered as reliable. So that's really the root of most of the modern thinking along that score.
So what do you hope to achieve with your new book on Mary Magdalene?
I hope to achieve, first of all, you know, a really balanced book about Mary Magdalene. There's material about Mary Magdalene out there, but most of it is ideologically driven. You know, most of it comes from this perspective of trying to retrieve Magdalene Christianity and all that kind of thing. I'm just, you know, looking at this as an historian, just trying to sort of set the facts straight on Mary Magdalene, who she was according to the Gospels, and devotion to her in both East and West. And I, you know, I think in my heart of hearts, I hope to sort of challenge Catholics and all Christians to take another look at Mary Magdalene. You know, because there we see this woman who obviously, you know, was vital in the life of early Christianity. You know, she was, according to all four Gospels, she was the first witness to the empty tomb. She was faithful to Jesus, you know, at the foot of the cross, along with Mary, his mother, and some other women. And so, you know, I think devotion to Mary Magdalene deserves to be revived. I think she is a woman who really, you know, merits our interest and our devotion for truly who she was, not who we wish she were.
And thanks there to Amy Wellborn, Catholic writer and author of the book Decoding Mary Magdalene: Truth, Legend, and Lies.